the law can be a very useful stick in the arsenal to combat cyberbullying. I do like it when people take action, because it's just such a good message for the teenager who is being bullied that there are options, there are ways you can defend yourself. Sextortion was described by the American police as the fastest growing crime in the world. I get between 10 and 15 phone calls every single day from people who are victims or from parents of victims of sextortion.
What's up, everybody? My name is Nozivele Kwamgana Mayava. Welcome to Don't Hold Back. This is where we say it loud. Let's talk about it. Cyberbullying and online harassment. Now, I've been on the social media spaces for a long period of time. I have, you know, a fair amount of followers on all social media platforms. Now, we can't deny how social media has changed our lives. I can't imagine, you know, in terms of my achievements and what I've been able to do over the years, if it was not for social media. Now, I take the good, and also there is the bad. I mean, yeah, no, guys, cyberbullying is a lot. Today in studio, we have lawyer and cyberbullying expert, Emma Sadler. Emma, thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for talking about such an important topic.
You know what? I am very interested on this one because, as I said earlier on, you know, I have a fair amount of following on social media. I think on Facebook, it's almost 500,000. On Instagram, it's 290,000. YouTube, it's going on 300,000. So it's a lot. Yeah. And as I said earlier on, people feel over a period of time that they can say whatever they want. And yeah, you decided to put your life online, so we are entitled to say anything about you. Do you feel, because I'm in the social media space, or anyone in the social media space should be immune to cyberbullying and online harassment?
I don't think anybody should be immune, and I don't think anybody is immune. I don't think it matters what size of following you have, how old you are, what your background is. I think anybody can be the victim of cyberbullying. Mm. And I think it teaches us, especially as your following gets bigger, to have a bit of a thick skin. Mm. But it's still hard. Gosh. And, you know, I specialize in social media cyberbullying. Yes. I specialize in everything. I specialize in everything to do with social media. And, you know, it's a space that I should be pretty immune to. Mm. But there have been times where I've received content in my DMs, replies on my ex account. And, you know, it's had me in the fetal position. And that's somebody with my experience who understands the nature of these trolls, these bullies. And we have to think about the very vulnerable people, especially young children, as they get online for the first time.
Gosh, I'm just saying that I didn't realize that my then 16-year-old niece was on social media, right? Because I see this person that is very quiet and they never even want to engage on anything. And by chance, I don't know, you know, on Facebook, they'll suggest like friends. I'm like, wait a minute, I know this face. And they were using another name. When I got into the profile, I almost got a heart attack. The way she was dressed, some of the things she was posting. And I knew that I don't think she understands the impact on social media now, because she's in the phase where she's starting to discover herself. Peer pressure is there. What can we do to just empower our youngsters when it comes to social media?
Well, I think the first and most important thing is to acknowledge that social media is amazing. Yeah. I mean, you said in your introduction how important social media has been in your career.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of older people have this thing where we come in and we're like, oh, just get off social media. It's not worth it. It's bad.
Yeah.
And I think we've got to approach it from an angle of it is amazing if you use it right. You know, I am exactly like you. I've used social media for my profession from when I started out in my profession and on social media. And, you know, I've never spent a cent on advertising. I've never spent a cent on marketing.
Right.
I've styled myself as the expert on this topic on the continent.
Yes.
And so we've got to acknowledge at the outset that there is a space for social media, that it can be an unbelievable space, but that there are huge risks attached to it. So I think the most important thing is education, empowering people, making sure people understand what the rules of the sort of digital highway are. Yeah. It sounds so trite, but it is very important that before we quite literally give our kids devices and leave them to it, we have to educate them. We've got to make sure that they're not getting on social media too young.
Yeah.
You know, for me, that's very much like giving a child the keys to a Ferrari and saying, have a good time. You know, yeah. You've got to learn how to behave in this online world. Mm. And a lot of it doesn't come naturally. I think that we can be very conservative. We don't talk to our children about the kinds of content that they will be seeing. Mm. We know the average age of first exposure to pornography in South Africa. Ish. The official statistic is 11. I think it's a lot younger
Absolutely.
Than that. And we've got to be able to talk about these things. Whereas I think a lot of South African parents are very conservative when people come, when the kids come and say, oh, I've seen this thing, our reaction is just take the phone away rather than educate about how best to behave in this online world. So we've got to be talking about online predators. Yeah. We've got to talk about images. We've got to talk about when you started talking about your niece, I was very nervous that you were going to say somebody had stolen her pictures
Most
to
probably.
Create a new account. Mm. Because that does happen. We're seeing an enormous increase in image-based violence. So it's a form of cyberbullying in itself, but where somebody steals your pictures to create fake accounts and to cause you harm in that way. So I think education is the most important thing, making sure your children don't get onto these platforms when they're too young to understand the consequences. And I know that's a silly thing to say because at 13, you're too young. At 16, you're too young to understand the consequences. We could never have been able to foresee the impact that social media was going to have. I mean, I'm in the generation where I remember waking up to a notification on Facebook saying, you've been tagged in 72 pictures from the nightclub last night. And they're, wow. But now I think that we've got to understand that the apps change, the issues change. And from a parenting point of view, the most important thing is to know what your children are up to, know which apps they're on, know that they can come to you if there is something that has affected them and that you're not going to overreact, but that you're going to take their hand and lead them through this pretty scary world.
Yeah. I want to talk more about the cyberbullying aspect because it's something that is very personal to me. As I said, when it comes to my social media platforms and how I've used that, but that has also come with a lot of hate. Mm. And I'm like, I don't even know this person. And sometimes it's like fake accounts, right? For better part, because I'm human, obviously the first response will be, I want to defend myself because this is not true. Mm-hmm. And it takes one tweet, it takes one status, it takes one word of someone saying something and they run with it. Mm-hmm. So once again, I think this is more personal to me. What are some of the strategies that you could probably give a person in my position or anyone that is listening or watching when it comes to cyber, should we defend, is it our right to defend ourselves? Or should we be like, you know what, it's okay, they can say whatever they want. But also take into consideration how, once again, that audience can take something and just run with it, even though it's not checked.
Yeah, I think it depends on the circumstances. You know, we always used to say, don't feed the trolls. But I remember very clearly wanting to take my troll out for lunch and say, okay, say it to my face. You know, because because there is this element of being a keyboard warrior, a keyboard ninja, where you can write these terrible things and there's no consequences. Mm. So I think that we do see a very noticeable phenomenon that bullying in the cyber world is worse than real world bullying because it's faceless. So people are prepared to say worse things.
Right.
It's very public. Whereas if I was being bullied at school, maybe five people would have overheard it.
Correct.
But now it happens online and everybody sees it. And you can't escape it. You know, even if you were being bullied nonstop at school, you could leave school for the day, get out of your school uniform and forget about it for the night or for the weekend.
Yeah.
But now we keep that cyber bully in our pocket, which is a terrible thing. Even trying to escape it by leaving the school and starting again, it transcends those traditional barriers.
Yeah.
So you could reinvent yourself. And now social media means that those things can follow you. So I think that there is an acknowledgement that cyberbullying has a more detrimental impact than real world bullying. And I think that the most important thing initially, if you're being cyberbullied, is to use the technical options given to you. So block, right?
Yes.
So block. Okay. So
I'm a master in that.
Me too. I love blocking people. And I said to all my school talks, let's bring back blocking. We got to love blocking.
There was, I don't know whether it was a rumor or something like that, that I think it was on Twitter, that they're going to unblock automatically. I don't know what they were doing. They're going to unblock. I almost had a heart attack. I was like, no, they cannot unblock anyone that I've blocked.
You know, I've been slowly falling out of love with Twitter, with X for the last year because it's a platform that I absolutely loved. Yeah. I used to always say that Facebook was for my friends and Twitter was for the people I wanted to be my friends. But now we really have seen a fundamental change in the platform. Yeah. There is more hate on Twitter. I think Instagram is much better from that point of view because Instagram, generally, you attach a face.
Yes.
And where you have a face attached to content, it's generally more acceptable content. You know, I've been teaching for years to anybody who'll listen to me that if you wouldn't put it on a huge billboard next to a huge photograph of your face, your name, and the name of the school you go to or the name of the company you work for, you shouldn't be saying it.
Yeah.
So this idea that we are who we are in the real world when we go online, and I think that gets lost often. Mm. But on a very visual platform like Instagram, generally because your face attaches to the content, people are kinder.
Yes.
People are nicer. So the first thing I advise is to block.
Yes.
If people create fake accounts, burner accounts, Instagram, again, a wonderful new technical development that if you block somebody, you can also press a button saying block all future accounts created by this person.
Yes.
That's a wonderful way to get around those sort of recidivist bullies, people who create new accounts to carry on causing you harm, burner accounts, pseudonym accounts, anonymous accounts.
Yes.
So that has been a wonderful technological intervention. Mm. So choosing platforms that do protect you to a certain extent, I think, is a good idea. The second thing is to get evidence. Take screenshots. Well, I always used to say take screenshots. Now I say actually use somebody else's phone to record. Because with the rollout of AI technologies, creating screenshots is very easy these days. So I prefer somebody taking a phone, filming what's going on, playing any voice notes, playing any videos. For me, that constitutes good evidence. So we need evidence so that we can take legal steps. And then for children to tell an adult, tell a trusted adult, if you're being bullied, whether you're being extorted, blackmailed, whether someone's created fake pornography of you and they're threatening to expose it. If somebody is causing you harm, there are legal options and there are various practical steps that can be taken. But this world is far too scary for children. So teaching children that if they ever find themselves in a tricky spot, that they can go to an adult. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a parent.
Yes.
Ideally, it would be. But it could be somebody at school. It could be a counselor. It could be a friend's parent, an older family relative, somebody who's able to get access to resources that can help you if you are a victim.
Emma, you talked about, you know, there is a legal route or legal steps that can be taken. I think one of the things that have demotivated me was, it's hard to prove and all those things. And where are you going to find this person? Just talk me through, like, what do you mean about legal steps? What can you do?
So it's one of the great things about social media is that often we create what we call the paper trail.
Yes. Right?
So if somebody's bullying me, I can take screenshots or I can use somebody else's phone to record it and the evidence is there. Mm. Whereas in the past, if somebody was bullying you, it was a lot of a sort of a he said, she said situation.
Yes.
So I like that aspect. I like that the evidence gets created. We, of course, have to be careful with disappearing content platforms like Snapchat, View Once technology on WhatsApp.
Yes.
You know, so I think if you are a victim, then being ready so that you can film anything that's popping up on your screen and then deleting. The most important thing is to speak to an adult who can get access, because we can't all be going around being experts in law. You know, I spend all day, every day reading every case, every international development, all the new cases. It's a full-time job. Mm. In South Africa at the moment, you can get a protection order under the Protection from Harassment Act. It's actually a very cheap, very easy legal mechanism.
Okay.
It's a bit like a restraining order under the Domestic Violence Act, except you can get a protection order against somebody who's causing you online harm.
Okay.
It can be harm or a fear of harm, but it can be mental, emotional, psychological harm. So we're squarely dealing with cyberbullying.
Okay.
And children can get this protection order as well. There is also a mechanism for you to get a protection order against an anonymous person.
Okay.
So if you don't know who's causing you this harm, you can get this interim protection order and ideally serve it on the social media companies to hand over the BSI, the basic subscriber information, so that we can start the sort of track and trace. We can start trying to find out who is behind that content. Generally, with bullying victims, they know. They know who it is who's causing them harm, even if it's a fake account, even if it's an anonymous account.
Yeah.
And sometimes we do have a hurdle to jump in terms of evidence linking the content to the person who you're suspecting is responsible for it. But usually we are able to do that.
Okay.
So the first option is to get a protection order under the Harassment Act. The second option is to lay a crimen in iuria charge.
Okay.
Crimen in iuria is when somebody seriously infringes your dignity. Mm. So we use it in extreme cases of cyberbullying. I'm thinking of the Oyando Mbuli case where she laid two charges of crimen in iuria against Joyce Malamu. She'd posted on Facebook that Oyando Mbuli was a stupid beep, word beginning with B, ending in H. And then she posted Oyanda Mbuli's cell phone number. And she said, please, can somebody go and find her a blesser? So she stops phoning her boyfriend, asking him for money.
Okay.
She had been phoning the boyfriend, asking him for money. He owed her money. There'd been a business deal.
Correct.
Right? She deleted it quite quickly, but Oyanda Mbuli went straight off to the Midrand police station. She laid two charges of crimen and uria, and she was found guilty. So it's a lovely, and I do like it when people who have access to legal resources take action, because it's just such a good message for the teenager who is being bullied,
yes,
that there are options, that there are ways you can defend yourself, that you can stand up for yourself. Mm. So Protection from Harassment Act, crimen and uria. Mm. If there's defamation, there may be an option to take steps from a defamation law point of view. Mm-hmm. There's the new Cyber Crimes Act, which came into force about 18 months ago. Mm. And it allows you to lay a criminal charge against somebody who may be threatening you, threatening your person, or threatening, so violence, or threatening damage to property. Somebody's saying they're going to burn your house down, or they're going to cause you some kind of harm. You can lay a criminal charge against that person, even if you never see them again.
Mm.
So threats and incitement are criminalized. So there are these legal options. There are also disciplinary options. If somebody is at work or at school, you often can let the boss know or the school know, and disciplinary consequences can follow. So there are legal options. My experience is that the law can be a very useful stick in the arsenal to combat cyberbullying. Mm. And it is one of my favorite aspects of my job, is that a child can contact me to say they're being cyberbullied. I can write one terrifying letter to the child and say, unless you give us a handwritten apology and an undertaking, you'll leave the child alone. We are going to take all these legal steps, and it works. So that is one of my favorite parts of my job, is being able to help these victims. But access to the law in South Africa is not a very
easy
thing.
That's where I was going to go, Emma. Mm. But for someone who's sitting at home who can't afford a lawyer, right? And also, I'll be very honest, I'm thinking to myself, even going to a local police station to get assistance in this, I've seen it online on people that have attempted to deal with a bully online, go to the local police station. They don't know how to handle it. They try to mediate, call the other person. Mm. You must both apologize to each other. Those are the type of things that are happening in our communities.
It's the lack of assistance by police is a frightening thing when it comes to the cyber world. And it's not just in South Africa. It's a worldwide phenomenon. I think that the world of social media and the online world generally is so fast-paced. It's so new that a lot of people don't understand. You know, I get called into court cases to explain what an emoji is to a judge. You know what I mean? Like it is a very, we've got these great laws, but the application of them can be very tricky.
Emma.
You know, I've had experiences where I've gone to the police and it's an image-based violence case, revenge pornography.
Yeah.
And the first thing they say is, oh, we want to see the video. And, you know, that is victim blaming. That is secondary harm suffered in the hands of the criminal justice system. So it does happen. And very often people will come to me and say they're in this terrible situation. And I'll say, the problem is, if we do take legal steps, we'll add fuel to the fire. More people will end up finding out about it. Content that is safely in our hands gets into the wrong hands. So our hands can be tied in some circumstances. I would love to see greater training of the police, greater access for police and for judges and for magistrates to technical assistance. Some of the police I'm dealing with don't even have Wi-Fi or email addresses.
No.
You know, so it's all very well Facebook, Meta having a mechanism where the police are able to send a sort of a takedown, a law enforcement takedown notice. But the problem is they don't have access to the tech that they need to be able to have this hotline to these usually American companies. So it's a work in progress.
Okay.
If you find yourselves in the right hands, the right lawyer, the right judges, the right police, then the law can be helpful. But what I'm really finding, Nozi, is that the threat of the law is usually sufficient.
Yes.
You know, and provided we keep having these test cases where people are sent to jail for racism, for cyberbullying, that people are fined huge amounts because of various infringements, various online harms that they cause, then we're going in the right direction. Mm. It's not perfect by any means, but I think we are going in the right direction.
You know what? I remember a recent case with Bonang Matheba. Mm. She's a TV personality, and there was a guy who had a podcast, went online and talked about how she had introduced another artist to drugs. And you know, what I've actually realized is that it's usually people who are bold enough to say those things are people that know that they have nothing to lose. So Malang Matema went all the way in terms of suing the person, going the law route. And she was awarded that this person needs to pay a certain amount of money because it was defamation of character and all of those things. And the guy's like, well, I don't have money to pay. I'm thinking it's exactly what is happening across all social media platforms. Even if they sue me, I'm not going to have money to pay and all of those things. But now, apparently, in every attempt, whatever he does in terms of his work or whatever, he needs to give a certain percentage towards Monang. Mm. And I was like, yes. Mm. Now, this is the right direction.
So, yes, I thought that was an excellent test case. She was awarded 300,000 rand in damages.
Yes.
And, you know, very obviously, she doesn't need that money. She's the queen, right?
Yes.
But she started a foundation. Mm. And she has arranged a mechanism. I think he pays 800 rand a month or something. Doesn't matter. She said, it doesn't matter if it takes him 10 years to pay it off. She is coming for her money. And it's not for her. It's for her foundation.
Yes.
And I thought that it was an excellent illustration of the kinds of things I was just saying about where people who have influence use the law. Ria Kopane, he made this sort of podcast, very similar to the kind of podcast we're doing now, where he said that she was responsible indirectly for somebody's death. Well, that was the allegation, was that the reason that AKA and Anele Tembe lived this hedonistic lifestyle of drugs and alcohol, and the reason that she fell to her death out of the Pepper Club Hotel was because Bonang had introduced AKA to drugs, right? So it was a very serious allegation. And I think that really, if he had come out and apologized, things would have been better. Retracted, corrections, declaration of fake news. He didn't even turn up to court. It was a default judgment. It wasn't even a proper case. He thought the law couldn't catch up with him. He thought if he just ignored it for long enough, it would all go away. And it didn't. Mm. And she says she's coming for her 300, her 300,000. It doesn't matter how long it takes her. And I say, chapeau, hats off to her.
Because that is
a wonderful, wonderful example. And there are, you know, Basi Khumalo has also done similar
stuff. I saw that as well.
She's done some brilliant stuff around standing up to cyberbullies. She's also done some brilliant stuff around the power of images and the right of people to use your images. So we've just got to hope that people who have those kinds of resources keep improving the legal situation, because the more established those laws become, the more accessible they become for everyone.
I love that, Emma. Now, Emma, there's a game that I wanted to play because, listen, I could go all day. This is something that I'm passionate about because, you know, I've been through it. It's not nice. Mm-hmm. It's really not nice. People saying the most disgusting things. Though you've never met them, you've never interacted with them, and it just takes one person and it goes.
Yeah,
right?
And it's this cancel culture and digital vigilantism and guilty until proven innocent. You know, this is a very serious phenomenon. And we have to acknowledge that naming and shaming has its place.
Yeah, definitely.
In our culture, in our society, definitely. The law, as we've already discussed, often fails people. I understand why people turn to naming and shaming, to outing people on social media so that baddies feel consequences. But we do have to acknowledge that that gets misused.
Yeah. So we're going to play a quick game. It's called Rapid Fire Questions. And I'm going to give you a couple of options. I'm going to ask you a question. First question, what's your favorite internet scam of all time?
My most common at the moment would be sextortion. So it's where people are targeted online. They are duped into thinking that they're forming a relationship with somebody incredibly desirable. They send some kind of private picture or video, and as soon as they have it, they start extorting them. I watched a documentary recently where it was described by the American police. Sextortion was described by the American police as the fastest growing crime in the world. I get between 10 and 15 phone calls every single day from people who are victims or from parents of victims of sextortion. They're particularly targeting boys in South Africa aged between 12 and 20. And it is the most awful crime. And victims very rarely get help because they feel so stupid that they send nudes to people they met online. And they're very slow to seek help. So I've had terrible, terrible consequences from the sextortion. If anybody has been the victim of sextortion, they need to go to my website, which is called The Digital Law Company, and they need to read my blog called The Sextortion Scam, where I give tips. I cannot tell you how common this scam is.
And someone like who has never experienced it is like, no ways. Why would you give out, you know, your pictures to someone you've never met before? It's similar to how you get scammed out of money.
Exactly. But also when you first meet somebody, you might think you don't know them. But when you've spoken to somebody all day, every day for months, you feel like you're in a relationship with them. And the world has changed. You know, if people think, oh, how could you possibly think you're in a relationship with somebody you haven't even met in the real world? Come on. That's where everybody meets their partners these days, is online. So just presume everyone you meet online is dodgy until you can prove that they are who they say they are.
Okay. Most addictive law series.
Most addictive law series. You know, you're going to laugh at this. Firstly, because it's not a series. But secondly, because Legally Blonde. I love Legally Blonde. It's a movie. And Elle Woods was my hero.
Yeah.
No, I think my most addictive series is probably Suits. When Suits first came out, I loved that
show. Can I tell you, actually, that's what I'm watching on Netflix for the 100th time. My husband is done with me. Okay, most successful social media personality in the last 5 years.
I think it's probably Bonang. I think she really has absolutely rocked it. But the wonderful thing about social media, and you know, in the context of when should we respond and when should we not, the best thing about social media is that it gives everyone a voice.
Yeah.
The worst thing about social media is that it gives everyone a voice. But really, the best thing about social media is that it gives everyone a voice. And there are no barriers to entry now. You don't have to rely on sympathetic media. You pick up your phone and you can broadcast to the world. And that is, it's a terrifying power, but it is such an awesome power. And I'm loving seeing South Africans use it in all its various iterations.
Yeah. Emma, before we go into our snack, you are now speaking to a young person, a teenager, that just got their phone. They've been waiting for this moment. Parents said, you're only going to get a phone when you're 16 years old. They're 16. Mm-hmm. About to go on social media. They just created an Instagram account, a Facebook account. What advice could you give them? How do you conduct yourself online?
So I think that 16 is a pipe dream.
I know. I
would love it. I would love it. I've shouted from the rooftops for the last decade that smartphones, social media should be banned for children under the age of 13. But I would far rather a 12-year-old with full parents looking at what they're, you know, holding their hand through this journey than a 16-year-old who was totally unassisted in social media. So the first thing is education. I'm a big fan of people reading my book, Selfies, Sex, and Smartphones. It's like a K-53. You know, before you drive a car, you have to get the license. It's like the K-53 to owning a smartphone. So I'm a big fan of education. I'm also a big fan of a smartphone contract. So the parents having a smartphone contract with the children, which basically just says, like, these are the rules. You know, you got to play by the rules. Otherwise, your phone's going to be taken away. This is my phone. I have full access to the phone at any time, especially when the children are little. Having time limits on the phone, having a time budget. Not sleeping with the phone next to the bed, even if they tell you they need the alarm clock. They don't need it. starting to really exercise good digital hygiene in the house, not just for children, because, you know, I see parents absolutely hysterical about their children being addicted to their devices, but we're addicted.
We are.
And we have to acknowledge that unless we do better, our children are going to grow up as addicted to their screens as we are. So having device-free locations, device-free times, not sleeping with phones next to the bed, turning off Wi-Fi at night, if that's a possibility in your household. Children are clever. They're always going to get around all of the boundaries you put in place. So being as smart as possible and being as aware as possible to what's going on in your house. So that would be my most important advice, as I say, education. And learning how the platforms work.
Yes.
You know, learning that you're giving up a lot to use these super cool platforms. They are ostensibly free. Nothing is for free. What are we giving up to use these platforms? What do they own? What are they allowed to do with our content? Watching a documentary like The Social Dilemma is a good start. There's another documentary which is free to watch on YouTube. It's called Childhood 2.0.
Okay.
And as a parent, before your child is allowed a platform on Be Real or TikTok or Discord, educating yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying you have to go and play for Fortnite for 3 months before you let your kid play, but you spend 7 minutes of your life Googling it. And there is some bored housewife in South Carolina who's prepared an A4 document for you on these are the rules and these are the things and this is what you got to watch out for and this is what we think the age restriction should be, and educate yourself. You got to know what your children are up to as far as possible, obviously.
Yeah.
There's room for leeway, and educate yourself about what the risks are on each platform, because each platform is different.
Sure. The one thing I will say is, just remember, the internet does not forget. If you would never put your picture, a compromising picture or whatever status on a billboard on a highway, do not put it on the internet, okay? I think there was a Miss South Africa contestant that had entered a Miss South Africa. They had to pull out of the competition because of, you know, compromising and some tweet that they had tweeted many years ago.
Her tweets actually were posted when she was 13 years old.
See?
Use of the N-word, fat shaming, but it's still there. Right?
It's still the internet is not forget.
About whether or not that's correct, whether we should be judging people about what they were posting when they were 13 years old. Mm. But the reality is that we are, right? Mm. And we've got to take it upon ourselves to look after our online CV, be careful about what we're uploading about ourselves, what other people are uploading about us, and having a watching brief on what your children are up to is very important as well. Google your kids, have a Google alert on their name, and make sure that if there is compromising stuff that you get rid of it as quickly as possible.
You know, sometimes on Facebook, my memories for some, I delete all the time, okay? All the time. Like, it was like, oh, there's a memory from 10 years back, and I'm already cringe. I'm like, oh my gosh, the ugly pictures, what I said. I'm like, who was that? You know? But honestly,
I just look and go, oh, he was so young and so thin and so stupid.
Oh, that's the other thing as well. That's the other thing. Now, Emma, before we end off the show, I would like you to tell me what you bought and also why.
Well, I know it was supposed to be a snack.
Yes.
But, I mean, if this isn't a good snack, then.
I mean, hello.
So I am, there are a few reasons for this. The first is that it's called Miss Molly. So I'm a horse rider.
Okay.
And my horse is called Molly.
Okay.
So when I discovered this coincidence, I started buying boxes and boxes of this bubbly, and I take it to the horse shows and I give it to everybody who comes to watch as bribery for coming to support.
Yeah.
But I think it also just illustrates, from a personal point of view, my sense of occasion. And I love life. I love celebrating. I always say I can never be too thin because my sense of occasion is just too great. Every day there's another excuse for a party or to celebrate somebody. And I think it's one of the best things about social media as well, is that we get to celebrate other people.
Yes.
And I think sometimes we forget to do that.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just a reminder that social media we can use to celebrate ourselves and celebrate others. And we should use it for good and not bad.
I love it. I am going to open. Okay, I'll tell you what, I'm not a drinker, but today, I'm going to taste. After the night I had with a 3-month-old baby. Yes! Cheers! Okay, please don't. Okay, I'm going to pour one for you.
It is very fizzy, so just do a little bit.
Okay, just a little bit.
And it's pink.
And one for me.
And I have to tell you, when I started out in my career, I used to call myself the lawyer Barbie.
Okay.
I've even got Barbie nails for you today, but I think the pink is appropriate.
So there you go.
Thank
Cheers.
You for having
Thank
me.
You so much. Cheers. Let me taste. It's actually very nice. I didn't know that. I was actually very skeptical because, as I said, I'm not a drinker or anything else, but this was very nice. Thank you. Emma, once again, thank you so much. I'm empowered. Personally, I'm empowered being in this space. How do I use social media for good? How do I deal with online harassment, cyberbullying? I know for a fact there's someone that is empowered, that is listening to this, that is watching this. So I can't thank you enough. Thank you. And I'm hoping people are also going to follow you on the platforms that you had mentioned, read some of the stuff that you had written. And a parent that is watching and listening to this, I'm hoping that it has ignited something in them. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Guys, that is where we leave it for today. Thank you so much for joining us. You can catch this episode and many other episodes on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, my name is Nozibele Kamgana Mayaba. This is Don't Hold Back. I'll see you next time.